Joshua, is there a remote for Laura? There's something about control in that clicker.
All right. It's so fun to speak again. It's not Patty level fun for me. I don't like love public speaking, but I do enjoy it. And I'm only here about half the time, so I usually miss when we're supposed to contribute snack or childcare. So this is my way to give. For those of you who are here in May, I gave my testimony. For those of you who are not here, I'm Laura. Last spring I talked about how God has shown me time again, that God is creative, God is patient, and God has a plan. And today I get to talk about love. I have a couple individuals I spend a lot of time loving. Patty mentioned Soren and Maeve. This picture on the left is pretty representative of their personalities. When Soren was one, he would not have been out at the fountain with a rando. This would not have flown with him. But Maeve is like, sure, who wants to play with me? So she'll be heading home for naps soon, but it's fun to show up with her today and let her get loved on. So the focus of the chapter that I got was giving and receiving love in healthier ways. And I would like to lead with the punchline. You are loved. And God's love is perfect. We get to share that love with others. And there are four tips from the book. Since this is such a broad topic, I was like, I think if I venture from the four tips, I'm going to get really lost. So we're going to really vector toward that. And every one of us needs a love, receiving love role model, I think. So we're going to end there. But let's start with God's love. God's love is perfect. It's what makes this entire chapter possible. What a role model we have in giving love as Christians. Being on the receiving end of this love is life-changing, as we just heard about the student's testimony. Anytime we hear someone's testimony, it's such a powerful reminder of the fact that being on the receiving end of this love does, it changes our lives. And this love is the foundation that we really stand on as we think about giving and receiving love in healthier ways. I was kind of chuckling to myself at the other chapters and how I kind of sorted them. It was like, oh, this stage of life, we're really busy. Like, oh, financial thoughtfulness, oh, optional. Solitude, unlikely. Like, I'm kind of going through and sifting which ones seem like they'll happen, which ones seem like they won't. And love is not optional. This is a chapter that is required. And John 13, 34, and 35 reminds us, Jesus' words toward the end of his life, I give you a new commandment that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. What's so beautiful about this verse to me, too, in the context of giving and receiving love, is we can't just read this verse and assume that it's only our job to give love. Somebody has to receive it for that to work. So it is a beautiful thing to be on the giving and receiving end of love. One of the pastors at Reality San Francisco, Dave Lomas, has a book about the truest thing about you. And for him, the truest thing about us is that we are loved. That is our root identity. Yes, I'm a mother. Yes, I'm a spouse, but I am loved, and that is the truest thing about me. And so the verse that I just shared is an example of the fact that identity statements are everywhere in the Bible. When we find a command, we also find near it a truth about who we are. And this is the fact that we are loved and therefore. So we are loved and therefore we get to receive and give love in healthier ways. His therefores, so the commands we receive, are always built on this unconditional truth. So today, as we sift through these and we think about where patience is challenging and where giving love in ways that we feel really proud of is hard, I just encourage you to reground in the fact that the way this is possible is because we are loved. That is the first thing. Of course, we get to share that love with others. I am really curious, when you just generally think about it, what that looks like. The book includes a few very moving examples of the power of love, if you haven't read it yet. Even in circumstances where it feels really unlikely to have an impact or be fully reciprocated, the book talks about a mother who really stands by her son through some big feelings, knowing that just being there and loving him is all that's required, no expectations. It also talks about a mom that God worked through to love on a child and slowly heal her, and also love between spouses and friends. As I read, I couldn't help but picture a few people who gave love in ways that inspired me. They're pretty predictable paragons of love, striking examples of what this looks like in action. I wanted to do them instead of Jesus because it's like, okay, we need humans. So he's a human who did this well. Mother Teresa, of course, and President Nelson Mandela, they get referenced often. I'd be really curious to know who else comes to mind for you. They are generally upheld as very loving people who did what this chapter speaks to. So I will reference back to them a few times. The four tips in the chapter include tip number one, take calculated risks. And just a reminder, yes, it's a risk, but also God loved us first. We aren't going first. So the author words it as take calculated risks, go first. And I really want to remind you, we're not going first. God already went first, we're second. And we might be first in the person that we're loving on. And that's okay, because we have a very secure ground that we're standing on as we do that. And we have a source to sustain us as we do all of these things. So her big question to us is, what can you do? She constantly redirects folks back to the situation. It feels impossible. All these things are out of my control. She constantly goes back to, what can you do? What is the calculated risk you could take to try to move this relationship forward? President Mandela and Mother Teresa, of course, excelled in this area. They really focused on what they could do, even things that I would look at and say that looked like an uncalculated risk. They went beyond how I might think about trying. And yet, there's a lot of accounts that are testimonies to how thoughtful and prayerful they both were. So they were calculated risks for them. The second tip is, don't take loved ones so personally. This quote jumped off the page to me. We were simply available when a loved one got hurt. So when someone comes at us and it's a negative interaction and takes something out on us that is not our fault, and it's really not our fault, it's a sad side effect of something that's really important. Being nearby, being proximate when a loved one of mine is hurt is exactly where I want to be. And it's so unfortunate that sometimes that means things get taken out on me instead of like a direct conversation with where the problem really lies or the inner work or whatever it is that should be happening instead. And yet, that's where I want to be, right? When someone's hurt, I want to be there, even when it does once in a while include a harder conversation than I would have preferred. I like to stick to this 90-10 reminder to help myself zoom out. And that's, it's 90% about the other person and 10% about me. It's almost never 0% me, because we are in a relationship, right? It's like, I did some, like, if there's some role that I have here or there's some agency that I have here, I could say something, I could ask something, I could request something, I could encourage something to change the scenario. And it is 90% about this other person, so I need to have realistic expectations. I cannot change the whole thing. So if it helps you to think about this 90-10, like what's my 10% to get back to tip number one of what can I do, keep this in mind. Put it on a sticky note wherever you tend to retreat after a negative interaction, perhaps in your home. Or put it as your phone background if that's where you retreat after a negative interaction. And again, Mother Teresa and particularly President Mandela, what an example of not taking things personally. So many terrible interactions, so many offenses and grievances against him, and yet knew that many of them were just not about him. Tip number three. This is really what I do for a living, actually. It turns out if you struggle to let others read you in your personal life, that often happens at work, too. So if we think that our spouse should know better, we also tend to think our coworkers should know better. We definitely think our bosses should know better. If you are getting paid more than I am getting paid, you should be able to read my mind. That comes with the pay increase, so why are you not running this workplace the way I would like it run in a way that makes me feel valued? But this is a pervasive need as far as communication goes. So I spend a lot of time on not necessarily reading loved ones and letting loved ones read you, but a lot of my work is around reading other adults generally and letting other adults read you, including in the workplace. Also, my favorite thing to think about with this in terms of connecting it back to our faith is that God gave us a really good roadmap. And there's a lot of information about what God desires from us in the Bible. God does not expect us to read his mind. That is not a part of perfect love. And so as we go out and try to share this perfect love with others, expecting mind reading also is not part of the equation. So if I am out here encouraging people for a living to inquire and share and lean on humility and ask the other person if you feel like you don't know what they need and have courage and share what you need, I also have to do this. So I hold myself to a very unfortunately high standard for this one in my personal life. I did leave a love language quiz on your table. The book talks about the love languages. So if you would like to take that, you can. I also put the website on the other handout. There are two quizzes that I use. I use a workplace version of the love languages quiz that does not include physical touch, for obvious reasons. Well, the other four. And then there's also an apology language quiz. Much less known, much less used, and I would argue very important. Something around letting others read us, right, is like, this is what helps me move past holding this against you. And I have had in my own professional relationships, some perpetual issues that just were deeply frustrating to me. And after we all did the apology quiz, I learned that this person's love language, or apology language, was just really saying a meaningful I'm sorry. And mine was planned change. And so this person was very kindly always expressing how sorry they were, and I was like, yeah, but this is the third time. Like, I honestly don't care. I would like to see something different that I requested the first time and the second time, and I'm now going to request again, but I don't know how to say it differently to you. But once we figured out what amiss we were experiencing and why, that helped us move forward differently after we were experiencing things that required us to make amends. So the apology quiz is on the website, and I definitely encourage that too. You can swap those. You can do them with other people. Do them with your family. There's a love languages in the workplace extension of the research. There's a lot out there now. It all falls under the field of relational maintenance. And this has been studied because, just a gentle reminder, we spend the vast majority of our time maintaining relationships, not building them. So this giving and receiving love is really worth getting good at in ourselves with people we see often. That is where we have the greatest, most consistent opportunity to give and receive love in healthier ways. It's also sometimes the hardest place to do this because perpetual issues are perpetual issues. I also am a big fan of the Gottman's research for this stuff. Tip number four in the book is express love even when you don't feel like it. I loved this question for the book. I found it so daunting. I'm a pretty competitive person, so I was like, that is a challenge. That is a good challenge. What does it take to be tenacious and disciplined in our love? Whew. So I'm glad we've already covered some of the habits, like financial health and getting rid of competition and solitude, because all these practices reinforce each other, but I really believe they undergird our ability to give and receive love in healthier ways. When we are well, it makes giving love a whole lot easier when we don't feel like it, when we are resourced. It also kind of stinks to admit this as a busy working mother, because it's very clear, it's like, okay, I need to know myself and also find time for myself and spend time with God and da-da-da-da-da, because all of this leads into my ability to do what I care most about that's right in front of me, which is love the people who are in my family and in my community. Hard thing to make time for, but really important. This is just a quote that I read 2 weeks ago as I was noodling on this topic and found such a good reminder. In any moment on any given day, I can measure my wellness by this question: is my attention on loving, or is my attention on who isn't loving me? This is the reminder to take that walk, to call a friend, to do the coffee date Patty told us to do maybe a year ago that I still have not scheduled. Anybody? I'm an A-plus student here, so I still need to do my homework. But reminder to also think about on a deep level, right? On a really deep level, what sustains our wellness so that we can focus on loving others. This is the overview of what the author covers. She focuses on sharing love, on healthy expectations, for example, on how love looks like boundaries sometimes. So she shares a whole lot more. But I wanted to ground us in this first part of we are loved. We give and receive love in healthy ways because it's our identity. We are loved. And that there are ways we can do this in a healthier pattern. So my final invitation is that you identify a receiving love role model. I am sure that President Mandela and Mother Teresa received love in extremely powerful ways. They could not have done a lifetime of what they did without it. I don't think it's humanly possible. And yet, I don't know those details the way I've heard stories about how President Mandela spoke to prison guards and how Mother Teresa served in Calcutta. This is the story of receiving is one less told, I think, in our culture. And so it's a missed opportunity for me to learn about them and consider the healthy ways that I can receive love to give in a way that they give. And this has been my major growth area as a mom. I am an acts of service person, much my poor husband. So I think it's like easier if it's gifts or something. But I'm an acts of service person, so I will never forget my stepmom. She came and cooked a bunch of food for me after I had my son. She was very concerned about me getting sick. She's Chinese, and so she has a lot of rules around my postpartum experience, and I willingly accepted all of them. One was she was very upset that I was taking a shower within a week of giving birth. I needed it. And so she insisted that I stay in the bathroom, close the door in the steam, wrapped in a towel, and she was going to come in and blow dry my hair before she allowed me to leave the bathroom to make sure that I wouldn't get sick because I was cold, because I'd had a December baby. I will never forget sitting there, age 32, totally capable of doing this myself, letting my stepmom blow dry my hair. And it was so wonderful. And similarly, my husband traveled a lot in the month of September, and I think previous Laura would have been like, I've got this, no problem. And actually my friend who lives in the city, loves my kids, was like, I'll come for a week. When do you want me to come? I was like, what? She's like, yeah, I'll just come work from your house. I'll help you for a week. So previous Laura would not have accepted that. And Laura now is like, yes, please, come on down. That sounds amazing. Did I need it? No. Was it incredible? Yes. And so that is the opportunity, right, of receiving love from her and the support. Table 8 was a part of my meal train after I had my kids. Are my husband and I capable of cooking? Of course. It's so wonderful to receive food, though. It's so wonderful to receive that support. So I don't myself yet have my role model for receiving love. It might be my coworker, Dan, actually. I've been noodling on him in the last 24 hours. I'm like, it might be Dan. He's really good at it. But I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to think about somebody who you know who does receive love in healthy ways and what it opens up for them, what an opportunity it creates in their life to then do other things. So, because I wanted us to do the thing that comes less naturally to us, we're going to spend the last 10 minutes really noodling on this receiving love question. And you're going to partner up. I was a teacher first, so we're going to do a pair share. We're going to have a partner. One person's going to speak, and one person's going to listen, and then we're going to switch. If you're concerned about being able to hear your partner, please feel free to, like, move to the back of the room, or like scoot around somewhere into a corner. But the prompts are in the handout, and I am also gonna read them. So these are, generally I would like you to stay on the topic of receiving love. Like I said, it's harder, and it's one we spend less time on. So two prompts that are available to you. One is, if you are the speaker, you can describe a time when you felt really loved. What was happening? What in particular was impactful? So your job is to let the other person read you and to learn this about you. Or you can describe a time where you did not feel like you had any more love to give. What helped you feel resourced again? Because that too is how you receive love. Maybe it's solitude talking to God, right? That's receiving love too. So those are your options. The listening protocol that we will follow is the speaker gets 2 uninterrupted minutes. You will share as generously as you feel comfortable. The goal is really that you make it easy for the listener to read you. Listener, you will then have 1 minute. After you have listened generously, you will mirror back what you heard. This does not need to be perfect. But something along the lines of, I heard you say, you shared that. Your job is not to connect. It is not to share a story of your own. It is literally just to say back what you heard the person say so that they have that experience of simply being heard. Then the speaker, you get 1 extra minute. You can add your final thoughts. You can tell your partner how weird that experience was for you. You can add something else that comes to mind that you forgot or clarify something that once you hear it back, you're like, oh, that's not what I meant. But you have 1 final minute to add thoughts. And then we will switch and do it again. So the person with the lighter colored shirt in your duo will speak first to avoid all jostling for an avoidance. So find a partner at your table. And if you have an odd number, move to another table. Do you want to move to table 8? Is everybody partnered up? If you can hear me, pat your head. If you can hear me, touch your shoulders. If you can hear me, snap once. Lovely. Okay, person with the lighter shirt on. Your 2 minutes is starting now. Finish your sentence. Listener, you have 1 minute to say back to your partner what you heard. If you can hear me, snap once. If you can hear me, snap two times. I'm skeptical about the rule following in this room right now, but we'll try again on speaker number two. If you were this speaker, you have one final minute to add anything else before it is your turn to listen generously. If you can hear me, touch your head. If you can hear me, touch your shoulder. If you can hear me, snap once. If you can hear me, snap two times. All right. Love the chatting. Okay, here is your challenge. If you slipped into conversation on the first round, maybe hypothetically, if that happened to anyone, see if you can really hold this space. It is so rare that we just get to listen for 2 minutes straight to someone share themselves with us. And it's even more rare. Well, unless you have a toddler, then it happens a lot. But it's really rare to have 2 minutes uninterrupted. That, for sure, is less often. So do your best to stick to the listening and the speaking if you can, just to see how it feels. It is awkward, but just see how it feels. So if you did not speak the first time, you have 2 minutes. Listener, you have 1 minute to say back what you heard. final minute to share your thoughts. Say your final thought. And go ahead and just look at me when you're done. Thank you. All right, you like each other too much. If you hear me clap once, if you can hear me clap two times. I think if I wait till we stop chatting, it'll be 11:30. I would be so curious if, for those of you who like really went for it, to hear later how that was for you. I do this a lot, and I do this with, this is one that we do actually really often with educators about how they're doing. Because you save face in front of your kids all day long, right? You can't tell students how you're doing. You are the adult holding down the room. And that requires a lot of leadership. And then during your passing period, you're like, hey, did you get that thing done? And you're like running around and your interactions with the other adults is making sure you are ready for tomorrow. And so they very rarely get the chance to speak uninterrupted or to even like hear that depth of sharing about one another. The room goes exactly the way this one did, a wide variety of people feeling comfortable with it, and that's great. I think it helps us gain some awareness around, like, wow, my daily life is nothing like this exercise. And that's true, and that's what makes it a really good stretch. So I encourage you to take it, use it with other people if you would like to. If someone's feeling really upset, and I can tell they need to feel heard, you can even just say, I'm going to put 2 minutes on my phone timer. Go for it. Tell me everything. And then you say back what they said. And honestly, a lot of the time, that's all we need. We don't actually need, I'm a fixer, so I would love to offer them 10 solutions. That is not what they're usually looking for. My spouse in particular is so grateful that I found this approach. But it is really powerful to tell people, like, hey, I will just listen to you. And let me just say back what you said and let that be their experience for a minute when they're really not feeling heard. So, like I said, you have the quizzes in your handout. The 5 Love Languages books are for sale back in the bookstore. I really appreciate, I just read Fight Right by the Gottmans. That is a really interesting body of work as well around how we can, in a loving way, experience and move through conflict. And so I just encourage you today to walk out remembering that you are so loved, and you are loved perfectly, and what security that brings us as we love others. There's a lot of ways we can love other people in healthier ways. There are also ways we can receive love in healthier ways. And we do not spend time talking about that or looking for it. And we don't write articles or make Time magazine covers about people who are great at receiving love. So it takes effort to identify that and to admire it and to cultivate it. So extend that effort. It will be returned tenfold, I think, in the way that you give love to others. So that is your homework. And if you are like me and you also haven't had a coffee chat with anyone from Moms Connect, that's still our homework too. So have a coffee, receive and give love to that person. Talk about who you admire and why and the way that they receive love. And that is all for today.
That was fun, wasn't it?